Buongiorno everybody. Wow, it doesn't take much. Fantastic. I like to win easy. Welcome and thank you for taking the time to wake up so awfully, awfully early in the morning to hear about a traditionally complicated topic. However, today we'll do our best to make it straightforward. My name is Vittorio Bertocci, and as you can hear from the accent, I live in Redmond, and Redmond, Washington State, and I work in the Active Directory team, and I specifically focus on developer experience. So, how many of you guys have Visual Studio installed in their systems? Fantastic. So, we are on the same wavelength. Very good. And how many of you guys write modern applications on Windows 8? Fantastic, a lot. Great, so this is a great match. We are going to spend the next hour discussing how to build modern applications targeting businesses. And specifically, in this case, we'll see how to take advantage of Active Directory, be it on premises or in the cloud. And that's pretty simple. And since it's early morning, I'd like to ease you in this difficult topic with a little story, if you guys will allow me. So first I have to retrieve a pen. Here I have my pen. And let's talk about the target, like the habitat where your business application would have to live. And let's go back in time to a simpler era. An era in which everything was pretty much working on premises. So here you might think of your classic old style enterprise. Sorry, let me open again PowerPoint because I mistreated it pretty heavily and sometimes it protests, and now it was protesting. Like it turns off the ability of using the ink, and without the ink, we have no presentation today. Good. We have ink. Perfect. So imagine, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, or even just 5 years ago, and you'd have your classic enterprise in which you'd have users. Here, let's have a user working on their own machines, CRT, because at the time, maybe even a wired mouse. Like, we're really talking about a long time ago. And you'd have like your safe environment, the intranet, and you'd have resources which live largely within the intranet, resources which could be web servers, anything that comes to mind. And then you'd have everything tracked in your directory, directory which would know about users, would know about resources, would know about everything. And then the custodian of all these would be your friendly system administrator, which will represent as a pioneer. And that was like the golden time of the administrator. The administrator was like a worm in an apple. Like he completely controlled everything, and he had this central place where he would be able to push policies on local machines. It would know about resources. It would push access policies to those resources. And writing a business application at the time was just a matter of running that application in the same environment because it was a network in itself which was providing identity, authentication, and everything else. But then, of course, technology never stands still, and new possibilities are starting appearing in the horizon. Of course, I am not here to sell you on the cloud. The cloud is here to stay, and it is fantastic. For developers, it's great. Like you can deploy stuff on your test production, but even for the administrator, it's great for many purposes because now they don't need to maintain their own hardware. Like, again, I don't want to sell you a cloud. The cloud is here to stay. If you don't like it, very sorry, wrong planet. Wrong time. But here, basically, what happened is that lots of resources started moving to the cloud. So let's do it. And although everybody were happy, the Active Directory administrator started having some thoughts. This thing means that now I have resources which live outside of the control of my domain controller. And that means that all the policies and all these nice things that he created for the years and learned to use for the years started being, somewhat less effective because they work with local resources but not with the cloud. And then things get even worse once you start realizing that many business applications really need to have access to the directory in itself. It's not just a matter of authenticating. Like you might have applications which assign issues to employees or assign bugs if you are a developer environment or do expense notes needed to find out who is in the same cost center and similar. This information is all available in the directory. However, once you're running in the cloud, the exact same things that you put in place for protecting you from issues are the ones that deflect these attempts to get in the cloud. And at this point, things start getting pretty bad. But it's not over for our hero here, because in the modern times, I don't know about you guys, but I have a backpack with four devices. In fact, my back is kind of hurting. But three of those devices are mine. I bought them with my hard-earned money. And that's a tendency which we see consistently through many customers. So now, users are hip. They go around with sunglasses. And they tend to buy their own devices. Devices that often are like outperform significantly the ones that they get from a company. And our devices that even if they get it from a company, sometimes they simply cannot be joined to the domain because they do not have that capability. You have an iPad or an Android device or a Windows RT device, then... why you laugh? Did you notice something weird in my exposition? Then you know that no matter how hard you try, you really cannot join that to the domain. And so at this point, here I think I'll fail, but I'll try anyway. Our administrator is in a pretty bad place. So there was that famous painting called The Scream from Munch. I don't know if I managed it to... Thank you. So basically, what we are going to do in this session, now that you are awake, and so I assume I can start pounding and do more serious stuff, what we have to do is actually overcome these issues which we have seen and somehow come back to this situation in which the administrator is comfortable, that owns the capabilities, and can, apply his policies, and at the same time, the user is happy because he can use his favorite device, and you, the developers, which, since you are here, I didn't have to draw you, but you play the main part in the story, can actually target those environments and make tons of money, because, let's face it, the business applications are the ones where the money is. I might be biased. So here is our checklist, which is also my agenda. First thing, we have to figure out how to deal with resources which live outside of your immediate network. Then here I will steal my own thunder and tell you that the way in which we do it is to raise the level of abstraction. Instead of relying on the network to do all this work, we actually recreate authentication tasks at the application level. And of course, that brings other issues because how many of you guys consider themselves security experts? One, don't be shy. Don't be shy. The first thing about a problem is to recognize you have it. See, not many. So clearly, we need to enable you to actually get the job done without really getting a PhD in this stuff or like have a significantly worse social life, which unfortunately is my case. And then finally, and here I'll show you a lot of news from the Active Directory team, which did a fantastic job in 2012 R2. We needed to be able to somehow use the exercise some control on these new class of devices. And we'll see that in Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2, we have nice features which really work together with the developer environments to give you exactly that. Does that sound fair? Fantastic. All righty. So, access resources outside of a corporate network. Now, here you could do lots of philosophy, but unfortunately, we have only 51 and 36, 35, 34. So I needed to be really fast. So I'll tell you already the solution. The idea is that most of the resources that you access today will largely be accessed through REST. REST, which definitely won on the market for its simplicity, for its ubiquity, for the fact that pretty much any device, including your watch, typically have an HTTP stack. Hence, you can always rely on HTTP for making a remote call. And OAuth, which I know I don't pronounce very well, but luckily it's written. So when I say OAuth, that's what I'm talking about. This one, OAuth. I apologize for my inability to say TH. We don't have it in Italian. Basically, this protocol, which only recently became a standard, enables you to have a rich richer authorization capabilities, which you can compose to actually create a sign-in experience. And it has also many other interesting capabilities, such as, for example, taking the advantages of a web-based authentication, which typically were relegated to web-based apps living in the browser, and actually brings it to your modern apps, to your rich clients. And we'll see that these give you unprecedented flexibility, as in you're all new features on the server side, and the client doesn't have to change because it just shows you this little window, and you decide from the server what the experience is. So here there is a quick crash course on how that works. If you go on your favorite search engine, you search for OAuth, you'll find as many things as you want, so I will not give much more details here. Let's just say that here we have the same actors we had earlier, your application, resource you want to access, the authority, which knows about both, and you just needed to project those in this new protocol. And it's done in a pretty straightforward fashion. Here is one specific artifact, which we call the authorization server, which is something which you can use to wrap your authority and offer its capabilities using this high-level protocol. And this authority has two endpoints. The first endpoint is what we call the authorization endpoint. This is just a classic web endpoint, which is meant to be used from your rich client application for the experience for the user to go through its authentication and, if necessary, through its consent experience. Like in this modern world, sometimes the user will be asked if he consents for the application to access the resource. Now, in business context, often it won't happen because the administrator is the real owner of a resource. And if the administrator gives a blanket consent, then you don't really need to ask the user as well. Doesn't sound very democratic, but hey, this is business. So here is the flow. You have your user operating this app, and you do some gesture which triggers the fact that the app needs to now access the resource. And since the app does not have anything for accessing the resource securely, it pops out a browser surface and navigates to these authorization endpoints. And in the URL, it includes things such as, I am calling from client X, and I want to get a resource Y. And here, the authorization endpoint will render some kind of experience, or perhaps it won't, like say that if you are collocated in the same local network, at this point, you might be already authenticated but simply because of classic Kerberos. But in any case, then the result is that it returns back to the application one code. One code which is just one opaque string which entails, yes, authorization server is granting you the ability to obtain the credentials for calling the resource. Sounds complicated, but it isn't. After you have done that, there is another endpoint, which we call the token endpoint, which is meant to be called programmatically. And at this point, the application itself, the browser, closes. The application itself reaches out for this endpoint, sends the code, sends its own ID. In some conditions, it also sends some kind of secret, but let's not worry about that. And the token endpoint sends back an access token. What is a token? A security token is an artifact typically digitally signed or similar, which can be used by the application to present to the resource saying, look at this token, isn't that fantastic? Please give me access to yourself. And typically the resource will have something. Actually, let me draw all these instead of just describing it. Oops. Here we get this guy and we copy it. And at this point here, there will be some kind of middleware which will be configured to know from where it should accept tokens. Like, there will be something in this token which says, I'm coming from authority X, which remember, in this case, you are just using it as a wrapper for your directory. And it will verify that everything is in order, that nobody tampered with it in transit and similar. And if satisfied, it will grant access. Now, the interesting thing is that this is, how to say, a very distributed model. Like in the past, you'd have a constant chatter between resources, users, and the domain controller. And so if something would happen, like you discover that this guy is really a thief, well, a thief and also very unlucky, because you discover that he's cooking the books, and so you fire him. Now, if you were in the traditional world in which you have a complete, a continuous chatter, then you'd find out right away that the token that you gave to the guy is no longer valid, and you should not allow any more access. In this distributed world, instead, what happens is that once you get an hold of this token, then you can keep using it, because until the token is valid, there is really no explicit communication between the authority and the resource. So in order to mitigate this problem, what happens is that we make expirations very short. So the authentication token, the authorization, it's early morning for me as well. The access token is actually does not last very long. And so in theory, this client would have to often go back to the authorization server and obtain a new one. However, if you start prompting the user every 5 minutes for the same credentials, probably are not going to make a lot of business, like that's a usability suicide. So auth includes another really nice mechanism. Together with the access token, it also sends you a refresh token. A refresh token is a token that the application can use for getting a new, fresh access token without really bothering the user again. So through these mechanisms, you can give a decent experience, and also you are not completely, exposed to issues like revocation. And now that brings a number of interesting challenges, such as, for example, you've got to keep this stuff somewhere, because typically, I don't know if... How many of you guys already played with your Surface, WinRT, and similar? Everybody else, you just want to sell it, so you didn't pull it out of the box. This is very bad. As a shareholder, I cannot. But anyway, you know that the experience is you open an application, pretty much every application will connect to some kind of resource somewhere, which will require you to authenticate, and then you do your thing, and then you close it. You put your Surface away, you go to party, and then the morning after, you pull out this thing, you turn it on, you click on the same app, and you expect not to have to authenticate again. So that means that somewhere that application has to have saved all of those tokens. And not only that, if it has the access token, which clearly during the night would have expired, and the refresh token, then you basically need to have something which will understand, yep, access token is now gone, let me try the refresh token. And if even the refresh token expires, expiration is longer but is not infinite, then it needs to decide how to pop out again the experience for the user. And clearly that's something that normally you'd have to take care of yourself. And it really isn't rocket science, otherwise nobody would do it. However, it's kind of a menial task. So I recently learned how to pronounce menial. Before I'd said menial, and all the audiences would say, what are you talking about? So menial, I'm very proud of my pronunciation now. And substantially, you want to be able to rely on something which will take care of that for you so that you don't have to do the same gesture over and over again. Also because The modern protocols might actually be easier than the old ones. However, this is still security. So if you do something wrong, you are going to have pretty interesting consequences, especially if we are talking about business applications. So we use auth. Now, here, there is how we do auth in the cloud. Okay, if you are interested in a more in-depth introduction to what Windows Azure Active Directory is, I can point you to material online. Here, I'll just go fairly fast through what that is and then how it's useful in this specific scenario. However, this thing does everything, including coffee. So it's really worth checking it out. I said coffee. I remembered that I have it. What is Windows Azure Active Directory? Windows Azure Active Directory is a projection of your on-premises directory to the cloud. The reason for which we do it is that we want to enable new workloads, such as applications based in the cloud, and using your on-prem directory for those workloads would not work, quite simply. Mostly because you need to be able to access the directory in itself, and the directory is behind the firewall, so you can't. And also because you needed to somehow standardize some of the aspects of using the directory. When you are only dealing with your employees, you are at like close quarters. And so you can have onboarding flows as complicated and as cumbersome as your business allows. If instead you are trying to sell applications on the cloud, you really need to be able to onboard customers, like at a click, just one click, and they are onboarded. And that is simply not possible. You cannot do it with your on-prem directory, simply because every on-prem directory is different. So you cannot standardize it, even if everybody uses the same protocol. So here is how it works, super quickly. We have one Windows service, one daemon, which runs constantly in one of your machines. And this thing periodically takes your directory and creates a snapshot, a copy of some of the things that you have in your directory in the cloud. So here we just call it tenant. We call it a tenant because Windows Azure Active Directory is a multi-tenant system. You see like this big sandbox. That sandbox is shared by all the customers of Windows Azure Active Directory, which includes all the Office 365 customers. And how many of you guys saw the keynote of day two? Great. So you have seen that here we are talking about millions of potential customers, which since they are already customers, that means they've proved that they are capable of buying stuff online. So they are a very, very interesting audience. And so clearly, if you wanted to target such numbers, you need to have a multi-tenant system where there is some kind of shared infrastructure. And here there is what that means to be shared. Those two arrows represent classic activities that you would do with a directory, which are like what is something which makes a directory different from a database. You have two ways of interacting with a directory. One is using it for authenticating the users and the apps that live in there. And that is represented by this little arrow. The other is by managing this thing. Like there are standard protocols for getting stuff in and out of a directory. The most famous one on-premise being LDAP. Now, in the multi-tenant system, you still have those capabilities, but those are offered at the multi-tenant level, and everybody shares the same infrastructure that brings standardization and that brings mind-boggling scale. And specifically, what we have for authentication are a nice collection of endpoints, which all support different protocols. Those protocols are there for supporting different scenarios. So if you're building a web application, you will go with SAML, you'll go with AWS Federation. If you're building an app, like a modern app like we are doing here, we'll go for the auth two endpoints, which behave exactly in the way that I described earlier, which is why we have two endpoints. We have the authorization endpoint, we have the token endpoint. In reality, we have far more, but we don't want you to know, so I will not tell you. Oops, what did I do? Then, for what concerns management, we have the Windows Azure portal, which with our GA a couple of months ago started featuring functionality specifically for Active Directory. So you just go on your Windows Azure subscription, you scroll, and you'll find a little triangle, and that's your Active Directory. How many of you guys have a Windows Azure subscription? Very good. Fantastic. And then we have another way, which I will not mention, but again, this would call for a session in itself, which is what we call the Graph API. The Graph API is held up in the cloud. This is terribly oversimplifying, but more or less it gives the idea. This is a REST endpoint based on OData that you can use for querying your directory. You can query this data that you replicated in the cloud without having to go back to your on-prem. You can do so very, very simply. OData is just REST, so you can do puts, gets, posts, all these usual things. You can do all your various server-side queries. It's very, 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 very powerful. And it is secured in itself through auth. So in order to call those endpoints, you use auth. So pretty much that's Windows Azure Active Directory. Now, let's put things together. We have a Windows Azure Active Directory, and we want to use it for the workloads that we just described. What does it take to do that? Well, the idea is that you have your application and your resource, and you have to have both somehow registered in the system. So let's put here representations. I make them smaller. Isn't PowerPoint amazing? And then now that the system knows about the application and about the resource, and we'll see in a moment what that means, you just literally give them the identifiers. And then you use those identifiers when you are making your calls. And then you need an extra step here for extra control so that our administrator is happy. You need what we call an entry in our permission table, something which says that those two can work together, or more properly, this client can call this service. And here you can declare a scope, which is just a string that gets associated to your client when it gets a token for your service. And this string means something for the service. Typically, it's like a resource. How many of you guys ever developed for Facebook? Okay, so you guys know that when you get a token, you can ask for scopes, like this token will allow me to write to the wall versus get the email of a user. So here, it's the same. The only difference is that the semantic is flexible. Since you write the resource, you decide what that scope means. That's all pretty straightforward. And finally, after all this blubbering, I can show some code. Well, code. For the time being, we are still at the protocol level. Now, let's take a look at how we can register. Oh, actually, I have it on this machine. How we can register our application in our service. Now, I got permission to show this about 45 minutes ago, after one night of negotiation with our marketing. And this is a new version of the portal, so I have to be super careful in going exactly for the flow that I'm being told to do, otherwise I will show you the wrong things. And also, it is not even a preview, it's like a pre-alpha. We had to wrestle with the test guys to show it, saying, no, this is too slow, you shouldn't show it on stage. It is indeed pretty slow, so I'm trying, and if it will be too slow, I have a couple of screenshots and I can fall back to, so that you guys know that I'm doing the honest thing here. So now, I just landed on our preview version of the portal, and here, the only item I have is a directory, is the Contoso directory. And if I click on it, and I wait, did you see the matrix? What happens when you hear two things twice? We are changing something. And here I get my list of users, and I get my list of applications. I already provisioned two applications for the Active Directory. Any entry is an application, be it a web app, is a resource, or I have a native app. And substantially, what happens is that I can create specific entries for this app. I can use types for these applications and say that, okay, now I'm creating a web resource, and this web resource will have associated to it various types of coordinates. So, for example, as you can see here, I have one app, which is web application or web API. It's my resource. And then I have one client, which is a native client application. And then here, if I click on one, we'll see that I have all the various coordinates that I need to do when I want to use one of those protocols to interact with that application. And that's very straightforward. Let's say that those are GUIDs representing the client ID, or return URLs, because when you do all of these various token exchanges, the system needs to know where to send back your token. And it's like a really not arcane at all. In fact, here I have name of application, I have the URL of the application, I have the logo. If you are selling it, you want it to look good in consent flow. I have this client ID. Let me zoom for your benefit, which is what I would use in my auth flow for representing my application, like this is the resource I want to use. And then I have other details for web sign-on, which we don't care about here. And here I have the list of clients that can call this resource. Like at the directory level, the administrator can specify, this client can call this resource and nobody else. So if I register another client and I try to call, the directory simply will not give me a token. This makes administrator very happy because coming back to control. And however, the interesting thing is that this application can also be a client to others. And so here in the web APIs area, I can choose, and by the way, I want to be a client to this app. So very, very powerful. Here I have a client, but it is absolutely, how to say, specular to what we have just seen. Since it's a pure client, I don't have many parameters, but the idea is the same. I have a coordinates which define this thing in my protocol, and I understand I'm rambling because this thing that is going forces me to act like a DJ. You know, those DJs that talk and talk, and what did they say in the end? Well, hopefully I'm conveying more meaning than a DJ. But anyway, here what you can see is the version for the client, which is actually smaller. I have my client ID, which I need to use. I have this redirect URI. That redirect URI is what is used by the authorization endpoint to signal I'm done. And here, there's your code. So that's the place where we redirect for the code. It doesn't have to be a real URL. It's the browser that you use which listens to a GET to that URL. And even before doing the GET, it will pick it up. And also here, as you can see, I am configured to call the one up, so exactly the specular of the other part. So as soon as this thing will come online, and I can't say when, otherwise somebody will whoop, make me much lighter and much faster in the, to come out of the house in the morning. But once it will be out, it will be awesome, because it will be super easy to set things up. And now let's actually see this in action with my Windows 8.1 device. So here I have a web API which is running on my local machine. And then I have a small test client which is written with our library. And so in a short, I'll use it for show the syntax of our library. But for the time being, just look at this as like another slide which happens to be capable of doing calls. So on your left-hand side, we have the client, and as you can see here, those are the coordinates which represent this client, the client ID, which I would have gotten from the portal, the return URL, which, again, is what I just explained, is what is used for retrieving the code, and then other little parameters which we can ignore. The authority is our authorization server, and the only thing I need here is really the root URL, the URL which I use for starting. And every URL for Windows Azure Active Directory starts with login Windows Net followed by the name of your domain. So very straightforward. And then I have my resource in which I have the URI, which happens to be the identifier. So again, not really an address. And then I have a URL because I also wanted to make my call. So now let me make sure that I am using the right settings, such as these ones. And now if I hit this button, I get my browser surface, and I get prompted for my credentials. So I'm still in a rich client, but now I'm dipping into the web experience just for authenticating. If I remember the password, since I have far too many. OK, things worked. Fantastic. So what happens here is that I got back all these settings, which actually contain the access token, which is all that nice Base64 encoded stuff, and then the refresh token, which is on that little line. I don't always get a refresh token. I need to be a good client for that. And now, and if you are curious to know what's inside the token, I know you aren't, but for the recording, I have to do it anyway. I will navigate to one website built by JWT, by a nice colleague of mine, which is currently in Europe, for TechEd Europe. So I'm stealing his own demo. And here, there is what I got back from our authorization server. This is just a set of info which represent both my client and my user. And this info is signed digitally so that when I send it to my web API, the web API can verify that actually this client has the right to make the call. And let's actually do it. And response. So I managed to call that web API, and given that I attached this token, I just got this thing back. And that's very, very easy, in my opinion. I hope it's easy in your opinion as well. And just for giving you a quick feeling of what it takes to write a resource, I don't want to go into the details because I know that Dan Roth did a great session about it yesterday. How many of you guys went to the web API session? All right. For everybody else, I invite you to check it out online. We have a new middleware based on Owen, which is very flexible, very powerful. And long story short, for making sure that my application accepts only tokens from the right place, this is all the code I had to write. I just had to add a little file to my web API, and I'm just using this utility class written by Barry Dorrance. I don't know if you know him. He is an interesting character. I said interesting character, Barry. Yes, you heard correct. That's for recording again. And here, all I'm doing is specifying in the audience the ID of my resource, the ID which I specified in my pages, saying this is my resource. And I'm specifying what we call the tenant, which is the domain of my authority. In this case, a Windows Azure AD tenant. However, this thing is easily modifiable for ADFS as well. So in short, it will show that you can get tokens also from ADFS, so very easy. Very good. So we saw some code as well, so check. Let's come back to the deck. Let's look at the time. Wow, it's a disaster. So let's talk for a moment about ADFS. ADFS in Server 2012 R2 introduced this new capability of doing auth directly on premises. So if you have ADFS on R2, you get this capability right out of the box. And this is one of the capabilities that we got so many requests for that you would not believe. In the last 6 months, like pretty much every time I spoke with a customer, they asked for it. And every time I had to like get rotten fishes in my face because I couldn't say anything. Windows has very strict disclosure rules. And so even if I knew that this stuff was coming, I couldn't say. So now, finally, I can say it. ADFS can support auth. And it does so in a pretty neat fashion. Let's say that you just represent resources as relying party trusts, which is the way in which ADFS traditionally represented resources. And you can create clients just by doing a little line of PowerShell. Very straightforward. And it also has interesting features for device authentication, which I'll touch in a moment. So let me come back right away to my demo machine. Let me TS on a Windows Server R2 machine where I have ADFS installed. And here I have my ADFS, which looks very much like the old one. Let me zoom on it. And I just happen to have some specific resource, which happens to be a resource I will use for, protected resources in the auth sense. And ADFS also supports the same token format, what I have shown earlier, the JOT, which is typically used for REST flows because it's very compact, very small, can be easily shoved in an HTTP header. And the way in which I deal with clients
is pretty straightforward. I can come in here, get my PowerShell. Here, I never remember if it starts with ADFS. Get ADFS client. Let's try it. Yeah, that's it. So let's do a more. Let's see if I can find the right one. And yes, I could. So here, like, this is like the joy of administrator, because they clearly like the command line tools. You can see that I can list all the clients that are registered, and in good PowerShell tradition, I can do the specular command, add ADFS client, and I just need to specify the client ID, the return URI, and that's it. Now, one important difference between ADFS and Windows Azure AD is that ADFS does not force you to have a permission table. Let's say that as long as the client is recognized as registered, it can call any resource. Let's say that the system will not search for a match between the two. Whereas if you don't add that match in Windows Azure AD, you don't even get a token. And here, clearly, you can add the rules in which you can say if the client is this one, allow, otherwise disallow. But it doesn't come out of the box. And just for giving you a feeling of how this works, I can come back to my application one. And I can clean up this buffer. I can load some other settings, like, for example, maybe this one. Okay, and as you can see here, the main difference is the authority is different. It's like the address of my ADFS server, but everything else is pretty much the same. And so here, once I hit this add, yeah. The reason for which it looks funny is that a few hours ago at CAD Europe, the owner of this VM was doing a demo in his own session about how nicely you can customize the experience in ADFS. And so every time I connect, I never know how this will look like. And today, it's a fruity one. Fantastic. So let's see if I remember this password as well. Okay. And here, you can see that I did get back a token, but I did not get back a refresh token. Reason being that the flow I've used is not using what we call a registered device, a workplace join device. And we'll see in a short what that means. But anyway, this demonstrates that this stuff works with ADFS as well. Very good. So let's come back here. Okay. So after a long time blubbering, check. We took care of the first part. Now we know how to deal with things which live outside of our boundaries. However, now we've got to do something about making this thing usable. Because, hey, we have seen that the protocol is pretty straightforward. However, you need to find a way of making this repeatable and sustainable across all the apps that you write. And the way in which we plan to enable that is through the Windows Azure Authentication Library, which we will probably rename in a short to a name which expresses that it works with both the cloud version and the on-prem version of Active Directory. But for the time being, if you search on the internet, it's called AAL. This thing helps you to get tokens. Like, its main purpose is on the raison d'etre, is to help you to get a token without knowing much details about it. You just provide what you know about your scenario, which authority you want to use, which resource you want a token for, what is the idea of a client you want to use, and we take care of everything else. We also take care of doing things like saving your tokens in a permanent cache, and taking decisions on the fly transparently about when to refresh a token versus returning what we already have versus prompting you again. So we automate all that aspect so that when you go to the faucet, you open and you get your water, as opposed to worrying about where the pipes are going, where cobwebs, the wall is dirty. Don't worry. We take care of it. And this ships as a NuGet package, which is currently in preview. You can just go in Visual Studio, manage package, AAL, and you'll find it. We have a version for .NET, and the the version I'm using here, of course, is the one for Windows Store. And this is how it's layered. How many of you guys know what is in Windows Runtime Component? Some. A Windows Runtime Component is a new way, came out with Windows 8, new with a Windows Runtime, a way of packaging your logic, which you can use for delivering specific capabilities and libraries to your apps. What makes it specific to Windows RT is that if you follow certain conventions, certain scaffolding, you can expose this thing to all the languages that are supported by WinRT. So you have one single library, and the same library can be used whether you're writing C#, or whether you're writing HTML5, JS, WinJS type of applications. And you can also use it with C++, although the NuGet version that we use does not recognize that kind of projects. So you'd have to pull the file out. So the idea is that you take this thing and you use it using whatever language you want to use, which in fact is a good moment for me to ask you, how many of you guys use C# for modern apps? Thank you. And how many of you guys use HTML5.js? All right, thank you. Interesting disparity. Well, that works for both of you guys. And here, there is how you use it. And if somebody tells you that identity is complicated, please point them to this slide. Do me a personal favor. Now, in order to get a token, here you need to do two things. You basically just need to take things you already know about your scenario, and you have to represent those in code without knowing any of the underlying details. You start by creating an authentication context. An authentication context is a representation of your authority in your code. Once you create that and you tie it to one specific domain, that's the place you go for getting all the services you expect from your authority. After you're done that, you just ask for a token, and in the simplest case, you say, I want a token, and I want it from this client, you do the client ID, and for this resource, and you give the ID of a resource. And that's it. And this system will take care of prompting you if it's necessary to prompt you, give you a token if it's already cached, use the refresh token before giving it back if it is expired, and all these kind of interesting things. So very, very straightforward. At this point, the role of AAL ends. AAL just moves out of the way, and now you have a token, and you can use it for calling the resource, using whatever system you want. We designed this thinking about REST. However, you can use whatever protocol you want. The reason for which we don't give you a proxy or a library, like actually there are two reasons. One is that REST is super simple. So do you really need us to write those two lines of code for you? Create a client, add a header with that. I think that that would just be in your way. But the second is that we have experience in this matter. How many of you guys use the WCF? Many, fantastic. So you'll be familiar with this idea of channel. If you want to use WCF for calling a resource, you have to use a channel, which is generated automatically by the system. Now, a channel in that case is justified because, WCF does complicated things on the wire. However, this historically always created a dilemma. Like, should I use the channel or should I use the library that I have got for wrapping my service? And the two things were always at odds with each other. So in this case, we decided to remove ourselves from your way so that you can get this token and use it in whatever way you want. Again, in the vast majority of cases, that will be like the last two lines, HTTP client, a new HTTP client, and then you just assign the header. So very, very straightforward. Now let's talk for a moment about user experience. The dialogue that you have seen coming out in our sample is a dialogue provided directly from the Windows runtime. It's called the Web Authentication Broker. How many of you guys ever used that class? Some. Great. So that class is a true broker. It's something which lives in a different apartment. It's a different app. It has an isolated cookie store so that your application doesn't have access to it. And this is provided for you for painting HTML code from the web so that you can drive this kind of authentication flows, and then it securely give you back the parameters that we obtained. It's pretty easy to use, but it requires you to understand more or less the protocol level. So with AIL, we wrap that thing so that you use the interface that we have just described, client ID resource, and inside we take care of using the correct part. The other part is a new thing that we have in Windows 8.1, which is a standard way for you to add capability for your users to connect accounts to your application and to choose between accounts and maintain, how to say, their identity. In the first wave of Windows 8 applications, pretty much every application had to figure out that aspect on its own. And so the result is that things are all over the place. Like, everybody has been very clever, but everybody has been different from each other. And so the result is that the users are somewhat confused. And also, like, writing that code is overhead. So now in 8.1, we have APIs specifically for managing accounts in your modern applications. And I will just show you the results, but if you want to know how to code that, go to Karen Beer session, which I believe it might be at 11, and it's, the code is 3113. He'll go in the details of both Web Authentication Broker and the other one. And now, let me just give you a feeling of what I'm talking about here. Let's come back to this guy, and let's open a third Visual Studio. Yeah, I have 12 gigabytes of RAM. I can afford it. And here, for once, like with excuse that I'm a server-side guy, I always write test applications that usually look pretty bad. And instead of this time, since it was like a modern app, I decided to go out of my way and find my inner Italian and do some decent design. So you guys tell me if I succeeded. Ta-da! So this is my... Thank you. That's actually my my hometown. It's a picture I took a couple of weeks ago. I went back to Italy for a wedding. Cluck, cluck. So now I know that I own the rights of that image, and nobody can come after me. So this is a test application. The idea is that with this app, you can publish your presence online for your colleagues, others in your directory you find, and you can see also where they are if they decided to do the same. This is completely voluntary. This is not, like to say, out of band tracking. Also, this is just an example. So please don't tweet... the Italian hippie wants to crap me, to trap me, and stalk me, and similar. And here the idea is that you can have a list of your colleagues under Windows Azure ID and under your instead local directory, just for showing that it works with both. And here there's a new experience that Windows 8.1 offers you. You can see here that I have a new entry called Accounts under Settings. And if I click on it, here I have two providers, which I created, which I can use for adding, connecting accounts to this application. So once I click on it, AIL kicks in. So here, actually, I can use this opportunity for showing you a nice feature of Windows Azure AD, which is multiple authentication factors. This is exactly the same code as earlier, but now I want to show that this user will use a second authentication factor. But first, let me check if my phone has... signal, yes, it does. Without signal, this is a demo which ends badly. So, Terry, research. So in my directory, I marked the Terry as requires multiple authentication factor. So now I still have to write my password. But once I send it, as you can see, this thing is, let me see if I can make you hear the vibration. Mm-hmm. I got an SMS, did you hear that? And in this SMS, I got a code that I now have to type to prove that I do have access to my phone, so true multiple authentication factor. And once I hit sign in, hoping I didn't misspell it, did I misspell it? No. I'm signed in. So now, whatever new capability you want to add at the server side, you can easily do so. And now it was calling the service, and now, basically, I have my list of all colleagues that are using the same thing, and now I have explicitly the account that I used, which I can happily come in here and
remove, and I can still add the extra accounts. I can do, like, I have a complete freedom on how to do that. And every application in 8.1 can use the same mechanism. So the user will be trained to take advantage of that, which, in my opinion, is pretty neat. So now, let's come back to here. And, okay, here I add some details about the cache, and I add this slide just to scare you. Like, look at all this complicated stuff. That's what we do behind the scenes for figuring out if we have to give you a token or refresh it or prompt you again. So you don't have to worry about any of that. We do it. So let me hide it quickly. And do you think I can check the second mark? Good. Thank you. All right. So now let's look at the last thing, and let's do it quickly because I have just 4 minutes. This is a very, very cool new feature that we have in Windows 8.1 and in Windows Server R2. The idea is the following. Some devices cannot be domain joined. However, that doesn't mean that we can't do anything for being a bit more, how to say, cognizant about who owns this device, if this device is registered, if it belongs to an employee, if we have some degree of visibility of what's going on in there. We might not be able to push group policies to it, but we can still do something about it. And the idea is that this something is, long story short, dropping there a certificate. There is a flow in which you take your machine and you workplace join it, and we'll see in a moment what that means. And this system verifies that it's actually you by using a similar multiple authentication factor as we have seen in here. And that's it. From that moment on, you have a certificate on your machine. And when you make a call using our libraries, this certificate will be automatically picked up. And ADFS in Windows Server 2012 R2 is capable of looking for this certificate. And if it's there, it can do things like allowing you access, not allowing you access. And you have lots of more details and pictures. But you know what? I'm just going to show you, because it's faster. So let's come to my machine. And now here, I will need to workplace join this machine. And I'm not sure if it will work, because, again, they did stuff during TechEd Europe, but I'll do my best shot. So let's start searching for workplace. Here I have this new entry, which is workplace settings. Here I can just say what is the user of my ADFS. And when I hit join, first, the password, as usual. Thank you. And now, sometimes I will get a call. Sometimes instead we'll... Okay, so I did this so many times that this thing probably says, oh, it's again the Italian. Yeah, give him the certificate. But normally you'd get a call similar to the experience that I've shown earlier, in which first it would verify it's actually you, and then it would give you a certificate. But in this case, it worked out. And so now I can go on my, again, on my application one here. And I can clean my cache as usual. I can open my settings for one service which has been configured to use this thing. And now when I, oops, now it will crash. Sorry, guys, I made, no, it didn't crash, strange. Okay, let me say I'm Vittorio B at contoso100.com. I will not tell you my password. And eventually, like before tomorrow, before 45 seconds. Well, unfortunately, I think that since they say that instance has been, how to say, used and abused at the same time, because in theory, I would have just gotten back a dialogue saying, thank you for the certificate. Here, there is back your token. But it didn't work. But if you have an 802.1 device, you can definitely try it by yourself. And now, let me use my last 19 seconds. That sounds pretty bad. By saying that, yep, even if it didn't exactly go entirely through, and later I'll be here the entire morning, so we can repeat it as many times as you want. I'll put the green anyway, because I am very optimistic. And in summary, the idea is that all those things that we identified that might make your life difficult for modern apps in business environment has been overcome. We have OAuth capability in the cloud, OAuth capability on-premise. We have libraries for you to take advantage of those things without becoming security experts. And we have these new fancy capabilities for exercising some degree of control on machines that are not domain joined. And so, as you can see, our administrator is happy again. So I'll be in, here for the rest of the morning. And from the slides, you'll have a number of places where you can go for finding out more. And if you are in a fantastic mood, scan the QR code and feel it. And if you are tired or not entirely satisfied, have coffee, have a donut, and forget everything about this. Thank you.